Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science interviews and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, a blue moon in August seen round the world. And a scientist speaks on sustainability 20 years after the Earth Summit in Rio. Here's a scientist soundbite.
In recent decades, that name has become a part of astronomical folklore. A blue moon for the second full moon of a calendar month like the one we're going to have on August 31st.
You're listening to Sky Watcher Deborah Bird. More with her later, but first, science news of the week with Michael Brennan and Emily Howard.
Carbon nanotubes are some of the strongest materials on Earth and are used in high-performance tennis rackets, tiny transistors, and have potential uses in everything from medicine to electronics to construction. However, a new study has shown that carbon nanotubes can be toxic to aquatic animals. This is according to a study published in the August journal Environmental Toxicology and Chemistry.
Want to help scientists study earthquakes? The Quake Catcher Network is looking for volunteers to use motion sensors on their personal computers to capture seismic data. The seismic data collected could help improve our understanding of earthquakes and aid in emergency response efforts. For more about becoming a citizen scientist for the Quake Catcher Network, visit earthsky.org and search Quake Catcher.
Last week, we reported that July 2012 was the warmest month ever recorded in the contiguous United States since record-keeping began. Well, in the National Climatic Data Center's most recent climate report released this past week, July 2012 is further identified as the fourth warmest July recorded globally since 1880. Intense heat reigned supreme across the United States, Greenland, and Central and Eastern Europe in July 2012. That's probably why ice in Greenland set a new record for melting by August 8, 2012, about a month before the peak of melting season.
That's right. By August 8th, Greenland had experienced more melting than in the entire melting season in 2010, which previously held the record for the greatest amount of Greenland melting in one year.
Scientists have used miniature tracking devices to reveal the epic 30,000-kilometer, or over 18,000-mile migrations of a small songbird called the northern wheat ear. The researchers found that the birds take between 2 and 3 months to get from their breeding grounds in the Arctic to sub-Saharan Africa. And even though they weigh just 25 grams, slightly more than a robin, they cover an incredible 290 kilometers, or 180 miles, every day. The findings are published in the Royal Society journal, Biology Letters. That's Science News of the Week. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. This week's Song of the Week is Born from San Francisco-based Split Screens, off their new self-titled EP. Hope you enjoy.
Thank you.
We're Earth Sky, broadcast on over 1,200 stations worldwide, including Voice of America. Deborah Bird is here with news of the global night sky, the August blue moon. Welcome, Deborah.
Hey, Jorge. Okay, so the moon is not going to be blue in color.
Okay, yeah, that's too bad.
I know, it's too bad. And it's so funny because you see so many pictures of blue moons on the internet. And in fact, on our Facebook page, we've had a whole slew of pictures of blue-colored moons, all of which were made with special filters on their cameras. So the moon didn't actually look blue then, and the moon will not actually look blue on August 31st. And yet people will call the August 31st full moon a blue moon.
So what is the blue moon out there really doing? Tell us about it.
Well, nowadays, this is kind of modern folklore because it's evolved just over the past few decades. But people call the second full moon of a calendar month a blue moon. And, you know, that's a very, that idea that the second full moon of a month is a blue moon has, you know, basically kind of swept the nation, popularized like radio shows like ours, and ended up in the game Trivial Pursuit at one point, and, you know, in various ways kind of entered the popular culture. So in recent decades, that name has become a part of astronomical folklore, a blue moon for the second full moon of a calendar month, like the one we're going to have on August 31st.
But Deborah, there is some controversy about the blue moon, isn't there?
Right. There are purists out there. I'm not one of them, but there are pure, because I like all the kinds of blue moons. I think they're all a lot of fun. But there are people out there who say that, no, a blue moon is not the second full moon of a calendar month. A blue moon, traditionally in folklore, has to be the third of four full moons in a season. So the August 31st moon would not qualify by that definition as a blue moon.
Huh. Okay. So when is the next blue moon by that definition?
The next blue moon, that's the third of four full moons in a season, will be August 21st of 2013. And you see me hesitating when I say that because I have to, every time I have to say third of four full moons in a season, I have to like engage my brain to say that. Whereas second full moon of a month is a lot easier to remember. And I think that's one reason that people have come to accept the second full moon of a month definition for blue moons. And after all, you know, this is folklore and we're the folk. So, you know, we get to decide on this definition.
And if you'd like to read more about it, I encourage people to look at your article, When is the Next Blue Moon? At earthsky.org.
Yes, we will have articles. And when you see that article, you'll see that we have some beautiful pictures of blue-colored moons on the article, taken with blue filters. And again, the moon will not look blue in color on August 31st. There are some atmospheric conditions that can cause a moon to look blue. And in particular, a certain sized particle of something like smoke in the air can cause that to happen. But that is indeed a very, very rare occurrence. I've never seen a moon personally in my 40 years of stargazing that looked blue in color, but some people say they have. So it can happen, but the one on August 31st will not look blue in color, but I found some pretty pictures of blue-colored moons, so I put them on the article.
And the moon, I think, is beautiful enough without makeup. It doesn't need any blue filters or anything. and we encourage people to send us pictures at our Facebook page, Earth Sky.
Absolutely. Actually, with every full moon, we get many, many pictures of beautiful full moons. So please post yours.
Great. Thanks, Deborah.
Okay. Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. And we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. We're Earth Sky. We interview the world's top scientists. It's been 20 years since the historic Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, which led to historic agreements on climate change and environmental pollution such as leaded gasoline. In 2012, world leaders once again gather for the Rio Plus 20 Summit to rally for a common blueprint to balance human population and consumption with what the environment can support. In advance of the Rio Plus 20 Summit, biologist Paul Ehrlich co-authored a paper in the science journal Nature that explored how humanity can sustain itself through the 21st century. On the line now to explain his findings is Paul Ehrlich. Dr. Ehrlich, welcome.
Great to be here.
Now, it's been 20 years since the historic Earth Summit in Rio, where world leaders met to rethink how to grow their economies in line with the environment. What message do you, as a scientist, have for the world now?
Well, the message is, of course, they haven't accomplished that, but they were trying an impossible thing. That is, we're already way beyond the carrying capacity of the planet, even with many people living in misery. And there is no way to grow your economy and also maintain your long-term ability to survive as a civilization.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about that carrying capacity and population. Dr. Ehrlich, your latest paper in the science journal Nature examines how Earth, population 7 billion now in 2012, can get to a sustainable size. What did you find?
Well, the way you can get to a sustainable size, first of all, is to start gradually reducing both population size and the amount each person consumes, because the best estimates we can make are that with present technologies, you might be able to support 1.5 billion people permanently on the planet, and we are 7 now, and we're going to add, if the projections are correct, 2.5 billion people by 2050. That means we're going to add many more people than were alive when I was born in 1932. And most people don't recognize that the additional people are going to have a disproportional impact on our life support systems, because people are smart. We started out using the richest resources. We farmed the bottom lands. We drank water just fresh out of the rivers, which was clean. And as we have grown, of course, we've had to go to poorer and poorer resources, so that, for instance, each person now has to be fed from more marginal land, get resources from poorer sources. For instance, when we started with copper, we had it 100% lying around on the ground, and now we're mining ores at 0.5%. So we are pushing in exactly the wrong direction, and unless we change our ways, the scientific community has said many times that civilization just isn't going to persist.
One of the concepts that you explore in this paper for Nature is the concept of natural capital, putting a price on nature for the services it gives.
It's understanding that, for example, humanity is utterly dependent on flows of things that we get from nature, from natural ecosystems. Natural capital, things like our deep, rich agricultural soils, which are being eroded away and very much more rapidly than they're being reformed. Fossil groundwater all over the world. We're pumping out aquifers at rates beyond what they can be recharged. And the biodiversity that runs our life support systems, which is disappearing at something on the order of a couple thousand times the historic rate, and of course not being regenerated at any significant rate. So basically, our natural capital is something that we have not priced, but should be pricing, and we should be paying much more attention to it, and basically we're paying none. And we have a situation where most economists and most politicians think the cure to our problems is growth, when actually that's the disease. And our natural capital, among other things, for instance, includes the forests that absorb carbon dioxide from the atmosphere that should be being regrown everywhere. But they're still being cut down. So we got to learn, our politicians have to learn to evaluate our natural capital, and people have to get behind them to make sure that they do everything possible to preserve the things that are critical to us. For example, we are losing our pollinators. In the United States, the last estimate I saw was that pollinators of our crops provide something on the order of $20 billion worth of value, and it's something we're destroying without really thinking about it.
Well, Dr. Ehrlich, you've said recently that just telling people what the science says hasn't brought about the changes we need. What will?
We formed a thing called the Millennium Alliance for Humanity and the Biosphere, which is trying to get not just natural scientists, but social scientists, people in the humanities, people in society in general, in business and so on together, to try and figure out how to change our behavior. Because, of course, despite the continual lies put out by a certain segment of our society, climate change is just one of many extremely serious problems, and it's getting worse every year. We're putting more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere every year. And fortunately, social scientists know a lot about how to change human behavior, but it's not being applied. One of the things, for example, that we can do maybe to totally solve the population problem and get our population gradually shrinking is to give full rights to all women everywhere, make sure they have the same pay, all the same opportunities, and so on, and they will have many fewer babies if that happens. And so simply working for women's rights is one thing that everybody can do to try and solve the overall problem of our overshoot, of being far beyond the capacity of the planet to support even today's population in the long term.
What's the most important thing you want people today to know about human sustainability?
The most important thing about human sustainability is that we are going to have to find ways to gradually and humanely reduce the size of our population, to stop the growth of our economy, and to see to it that people who need more consumption get it, but that the rich learn to consume less. We are going to have to reduce our level of consumption. There are lots of ways to do that that could be very pleasant and make all of our lives better.
You've been listening to biologist Paul Ehrlich of Stanford University. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next age. There are so many artists, too much hype, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next age.
But what we don't know won't hurt us. What we don't know won't keep us up at night. What we don't know won't hurt us. But we don't know, but we don't know, but we don't. What you don't know won't hurt ya. What you don't know won't have you terrified. What you don't know won't hurt ya. But you don't know, but you don't know, but you don't.